The whole time she wasn't there. It was insane. You guys think I should use the app or should I use the browser?
You should use the app.
Okay.
You're on.
Well, there's one on, yeah. It went down. Sorry.
Sorry, team, just testing. Is it working properly? I'm
We
on
can
the
hear you.
Wi-Fi device, so this is new.
Can I see you?
We just can't see
You
Just checking, is it working properly?
Yes, working properly. We could see, we could hear you.
Okay, great. To our board, and welcome to the board, by the way, as well. Madam Chair, just for an FYI, Dr. Chris Rasmussen is no longer part of the board, as he's no longer the secretary in the Faculty Senate. And I was informed today that Dr. Wei Zhao,
Okay.
who's currently in this meeting, is replacing him. So she's brand new to all of this. So.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome aboard, Dr. Shao. Happy to have you. Okay. Let me know if we are ready to begin.
Give me one second. Yes, actually, we have a quorum. We have six out of our nine members currently on. So, Madam Chair, whenever you're ready, you can begin the meeting.
Okay, very good. Half a day and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our regular board meeting of the Research Corporation of the University of Guam. It is indeed to see all of you. I'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. It is 2:05. The first order of business is the approval of the meeting minutes from our January 15, 2026 meeting. That was some time ago. The board packet was provided to the respective members in advance, and I believe you have all had an opportunity to review. I'll go ahead and entertain a motion when ready.
I move to approve the minutes of June 19, 2026.
Okay, thank you very much, our Vice Chairman Regent Mililai, for making that motion. Do I hear a second?
A second.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Ricky Hernandez, our Vice President for Administration and Finance. Any discussion on the motion, any errors or omissions that anyone has observed? Okay, I don't see any movement. I'll go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of approving the minutes of January 15, 2026, please raise your hands either through Zoom or by video. Okay, I think.
I oops,
Or
sorry.
I, saying I.
I.
Okay, so it looks like it's unanimous. Minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda is item 3.0, Chairperson's Remarks. We are gearing up for a very exciting new academic year beginning next week with the return of our faculty on Monday, as well as our students on Wednesday, but a flurry of activities in helping to boost enrollment numbers. And so the Enrollment Management Student Success, their representatives, as well as advisement specialists from across our academic schools and colleges, have been very hard at work with their respective deans and associate deans to boost enrollment. A lot of activities across the summer, even among our research centers of excellence, our extension units, as well as our academic units. So we're just very, very thrilled about the, gosh, the amazing portfolio of contributions that have been made even across the summer. We do have an exciting ribbon cutting ceremony scheduled this Wednesday at the Margaret Paris Hattori Uchima School of Health Nursing Hub, and that will take place at 10 a.m. We welcome everyone. I think invitations have already been reached by all, if not most of you. Please join us. It will be a very celebratory event with a lunch to be held right afterwards. So we're very excited, and we will be acknowledging so many people who have been instrumental in helping to make this happen. I do want to introduce our Vice President for Finance and Administration, who may not have been introduced at our previous meeting. Dr. Ricky Hernandez joined us since January of this year, and held as the deputy administrator for the Guam Airport. We're just so happy to have him on board with his incredible diverse experiences across all different remarkable competencies, including finance, investments, procurement, policy, and so forth. So thank you so much. I also want to acknowledge that we were able to hire a new general counsel in Attorney Leslie Travis, who replaced former general counsel attorney Anthony Camacho, who is no stranger to the University of Guam. So he wants to be invited to the next big university celebration. So we have Dr. Pam Peralta Titano, who continues to lead the Center for Research and Innovation. Remember, it was known as the Office of Research and Sponsored Programs that works hand in hand with the Research Corporation of the University of Guam.
and we're hoping to see the transition to have Dr. Pam be a more play a more vital role in helping to also take care of the RCOG together with Michael, and be able to have just a wonderful cohesive team moving forward. So that still has yet to go through a formal process, but thank you to Michael and Dr. Pam for approaching the executive team to propose a different type of solution for helping to lead the research corporation so that it remains very strong and proactive and vibrant for the University of Guam and its respective scholarly community. So, in addition to that, I also want to remind everyone that our chairman of the university's Board of Regents is Regent Michael Nahalawa, with our vice chairperson being Dr. Janice Mulilai, who is a member of the RCOG Board of Directors. So we're happy to have you, Vice Chair Mulilai, and we certainly always appreciate your sage input in whatever spaces you're in. So thank you so much for joining us. I can only imagine with the major disruption that began since the beginning of the Trump administration, and that in which we continue to monitor on a regular basis, also cognizant of the consultant that we have on the ground in Washington, D.C., through the implementation group, and having them available as an incredible resource, not only in terms of monitoring what is going on in the changing federal grants and contracts landscape, but also serving as reviewers in the different grant applications that the University of Guam submits, or prior to its submission, they provide their sage, of course, input before anything's submitted. So I want to thank all the efforts of Michael in helping to just keep the canoe moving forward. Michael has had an incredible weight on his shoulders, being dual-hatted. So I just want to take this opportunity to just thank you, Michael. I know it's been a very, very tough journey, and I want to assure you that we are very mindful of how very important you are to the team. And, you know, we want to make sure that you have all the support that you need. Dr. Pam, thank you very much to helping step forward and providing that much needed of course, support. And I know that we've also brought on a fantastic member to your team from the Guam Department of Education with a tremendous amount of federal grants and administration experiences, so that we have a much stronger collaborative team together. And again, thank you to all members of this board and to the staff of RCOG. A lot of your efforts, even when Kathleen Moreland was still around helping to find funding for the new facilities, our nursing hub, as well as the Worry facility. A lot of the success for bringing these two facilities to completion is because of the engagement of the Research Corporation of the University of Guam. So we want to acknowledge those efforts. So thank you very much. And I'll just go ahead and pass. Let's see. I want to conclude my remarks. And if there are any questions, I'll go ahead and entertain them at this time. Okay. I have a hand up by Dr. Pam. Is it? No? Okay. That's me. Sorry. Okay. Moving on, under new business, we do have the interim executive director's report followed by three action items. So, Michael, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the kind words as well. I'll be going through a bunch of numbers, so if I go a little too fast, just let me know. I do want to save a lot of time for the resolutions. We do have three resolutions, but they're rather large in terms of content, so I will be going relatively quickly, but I think this is a lot of very interesting information. As mentioned from the minutes, the last time we had our last meeting was in January, so it's been about 8 months. So there's quite a bit of things that has happened within those 8 months. Mostly a lot of good news, actually. Some of our KPIs, our key performance indicators, our total awards managed did decrease from 114 to 108.8 million, about a 5% decrease. I mean, we know what's going on within the current landscape of grants, particularly on the federal side. It's quite different as opposed to the previous administration. So we kind of expected this. We do have an 11% increase in our annual awards managed. That increased from 37 to 41 million. Some of these grants are starting to ramp down and go into their last year. As expected, just from last time too, we do have an increase again in our non-government grants. That increased by 22.67%. Note in our last meeting and the meetings prior to that, that's been one of our pivot points in terms of if we're not able to get all the federal funding that we want to be able to push for more non-federal funding. As President Enriquez and Chair Enriquez mentioned, our partnership with CRI is huge in this. They've been extremely helpful in terms of helping us to navigate that, but at the same time, be our partners through that. We still have almost the same amount of employees as we did the last time. We're only one short of where we were last year. We're at 228 employees. We have a 9% increase in the total amount of grants that we support. So while the total awards in terms of the amount went down, we have more grants actually. We're at 188. It has more so to do so the fact that there's more smaller grants that are coming our way. And we've awarded so far about 10 travel awards. Some of them that have made the news recently, which is always great to be able to see them doing so well from some of the help that we provided to them, but at the same time see them grow as students and eventually to professionals as well. In terms of expenditures, our grant expenditures has went down. That graphic looks a little deceiving. It looks like it's such a big decrease, but really it's not. It's about a 3.9% decrease from fiscal year 25. I kind of attribute most of that due to the fact that we did have our longest federal shutdown in the beginning of the fiscal year. We were down for more than 40 days. So, and during that time frame, we basically told almost everyone not to spend other than their payroll. So we kind of expect this to actually eventually even out or eventually even outgrow the previous year. So I'm liking where we're at in terms of that. Our indirect costs also went down. It went down quite a bit, actually, but that is easily attributed to three grants in particular. Number one, PPG grant, which is the U54 with Dr. Rachel at CNAS, that expired, so we no longer had it in our current fiscal year. We're still waiting for the official notice to be able to get additional funding for that. There is also the closeout of EPSCoR that just expired 2 months ago, but it was ramping down. It was really just on a no-cost extension. Those amounts in the parentheses are really the amount of indirect costs that were attributed, or the difference versus fiscal year 25 and 26 from those individual projects, which easily make up the difference already. And there was also the termination of the Climate Smart Grant. But the good news is that that was actually re-awarded in March 2026. So we were able to get that back. If you didn't know what that grant was, that's a grant with Dr. Romina King. It's a $5 million grant that we have with the USDA. It was originally terminated nationwide, and we were able to successfully get it back about 4 or 5 months ago, which was really great for us to have. If there is reasons for optimism, NSF ECOR and ERISE, which we were just awarded not too long ago, which kind of replaces the EPSCoR GECKO program, is ramping up. So we expect that one to kind of take over from where EPSCoR Gecko left off. And also our NICRA, which is our negotiated indirect cost rate agreement, increased in March 2026. The on-campus rate moved from 39% to 40%, and our off-campus rate went up from 16% to 18%. So we expect that at some point the indirect cost to again also even out a lot more. Our operations revenue and expenditures are actually doing very well. Especially with the amount of things that are happening currently within our stratosphere. Our operations revenues increased by 15.12% from fiscal year 25. Our operations expenditures decreased, so we've become more efficient in terms of how we spend also within our office. Our net operations revenue as of July 31, we just closed the books over the weekend, is at 293,000. So right now, if we were to end today, the fiscal year, we do have enough to be able to cover our our accounts payable for the buildings for both the Weary and the nursing annex as well. Although we're actually a year ahead of that, but I've always been interested in being able to pay that down sooner rather than later. The number of transactions continues to go up. Our stipends increased by 9.12%. Stipends are traditionally meant for students, particularly for interns. Our total accounting transaction increased by 3.98% in total. There have been some challenges to processing time. I think one of the probably the biggest cause would be our accounts payable does get delayed sometimes due to UOG cash flow. I know that's sometimes a hot topic every now and then, but I always say that we're part of the University of Guam's part. We're together in everything on this, and I don't really want to point any fingers in terms of who's at fault. We're really all in it together. So sometimes it's just there's certain things that happen that prevent us from being able to, I guess, pay all the bills that we want to on time. There is more documentation and additional scrutiny needed to ensure reliability. The current administration in particular is asking for more documentation and more proof of things. So we always want to make sure that when we do process any documents that it speaks for itself as much as possible. And I do want to give some feedback too on in terms of our incomings. It's quite a bit actually. Our incomings from other units, just from our SharePoint, is about 20 to 40 documents a day. That doesn't include the physical documents. So there's a lot of stuff that come our way for the most part, and we only expect it to be able to grow going forward. Some updates. So the OPA credit card audit is still going. We had some talks already in April 1 already with them. They brought together some discussions that we had with them already, provided some feedback in terms of what it is that we could do already. Some of the resolutions that we're gonna show later on kind of is part of that reason of why we're making some of the changes in those procurement, credit card policy, as well as travel policy. Currently, right now, it's still ongoing. We're actually in talks with them to be able to continue to provide some documentation that they're asking for. In fiscal year 25, the financial audit was completed in June. There is no RCUOG findings, so we're good on that. The good news is that there hasn't been any grants canceled since our last board meeting. Very good news. Last time I mentioned 9.4 million, and there was one grant that I mentioned was canceled. And then that grant was rescinded and reawarded that same day. That was the SAMHSA grant. So that's back. The $5 million grant for Climate Smart was also reawarded on March 2026. And there's actually two grants in particular, the EPA Environmental Justice grants, both that operate within Sea Grant. One of them is directly with EPA, and the other one is a pass-through with SDSU. There has been in the courts saying that they're supposed to reaward it. We haven't heard yet from EPA, but I'm hopeful that it comes back. One of the EPA grants is $3 million, so it would make quite a dent to be able to bring back those award funds should it get reawarded. But we're keeping up to date. We're checking with EPA to see whether or not that's something that could be potentially reawarded. I'm very hopeful for that. And one other thing is that the federal government is pushed to be able to limit indirect costs to 15%, has been postponed for now, which is very good news for us. It doesn't mean that that's forever going to be the case, but it seems like they postponed that and they're not talking about it anymore, at least as of this moment, which breathes a sigh of relief because indirect costs is extremely key to the survivability of RCOG. So I'm very happy that that's currently what's being done. I'd like to take this time to also congratulate JV. JV Kakal is he leads the federal team of RCOG, and he just passed his three exams for the Certified Government Financial Manager, which is for the CGFM. He's now only the fourth person in the whole university with this credential. That's myself, Dr. Ricky, who's on this meeting, as well as Dr. Chrysostomo. So he's the fourth person now. So congratulations, Jay. I know you're still waiting for your official letter, but I'm probably not going to be able to talk to the board by the time you get it. So I wanted to ensure that you get your just due. Congratulations. It's very good that you were able to do that. And we're hopeful we can get more people within our office. One of the things that I do want to make sure that we do is I know we have a lot of young people within our office, but we have a lot of smart people that's within our office as well. And seeing them try to be able to go for these credentials is inspiring for me, but I'm hopefully it's inspiring for the rest in the group as well. Looking ahead, so there is a possible shutdown on October 1. From what everything that I'm hearing and reading, including from our own consultant, it seems less likely this time around, but I guess you never know. You never know with today's government. If it does happen, I think we're veterans already at this point of how to be able to respond. It will be extremely similar to what it is that we did last year. Cross our fingers, that's something that we don't have to experience again, though. There, of course, is still an uncertainty of federal opportunities. I just came from a conference, and that's one of the hot topics of discussions all the time is that we don't know really where the federal landscape's going to be, particularly with grants. There is a possible significant OMB change to the uniform guidance, aka the 2 CFR 200. It was originally estimated to go October 1, 2026. It could be January 1, 2027, and the reason why is because the recent budget bill that's been submitted actually puts it for January 1, 2027 instead of October 1, 2026. What is the change? It's a lot. So if I were to go through the entire thing, it might be over an hour long. So I'll just give a short while. 39% of the uniform guidance has changed, 53% of it in the post-award. So it's quite a lot. Some examples is all the employees in contact with federal funding must go through E-Verify, which would change a lot in the HR process. All federal payments must basically have a progress report associated with it already. So that involves a significant amount of cooperation from the PIs whenever you draw down, and several prohibitions of costs that were previously allowable. So advertising, conferences, subscriptions, publications, printing costs, and more. We don't know what's going to happen with this yet. There's a lot of controversy, there is a lot of other things. These are just the post-award side. There's a lot of pre-award things that are also very controversial. I know they have 500 comments from other universities. So we'll see exactly what will happen, but we are trying to prepare on our side so that we can ensure that we can follow it, should these things go into place. As always, RCOG is traveled, is challenged with space. So it does make it really hard to be able to grow up and keep up, which kind of forces us to evolve more by using technology to not only make processes quicker, but also reduce the workload and also increase transparency. That's a huge thing with me, is that I'm really trying to be able to find what it is that we can do to be a lot more transparent, not just putting things on our website, but also like where we are with processes and workflows, so that everyone knows and it's more transparent, and you don't have to ask questions of where one payable is, where one purchase order is. So we are exploring a lot of ideas for that. We've made some pretty good headway, actually, and hopefully within the next board meeting, hopefully I have more of that. And lastly, continuing to work closely with CRI. Dr. Pam has been really great to be able to work with. I think we have a very good relationship with RCOG and CRI. So continuing to work with them to be able to develop and find non-federal opportunity, but also partnerships for research and education. Is there any questions?
I have a quick question about your space issues, because I know that that's been a concern for a long time. Is there anything being done about getting you more space in Dean Circle? Just wondering, is that on the books? Is there anything being negotiated? Because I think it's important. You guys really need more space.
So the conversation began, I think, over a year ago, and the importance of having both the old ORSB, now CRI, and RCOG being neighbors. That created an issue because we already found space. This is when I think Kathleen was still around. And so we wanted to make sure that if we moved one of the centers to, for example, the School of Education facility, that meant that they couldn't be next to the other. Or if we moved them to the Yoji Cabo Field House, that meant that the one unit couldn't be next to the other. And so there's no issue about finding a space for a particular unit, but the issue is finding a space for both units because of the many employees that already exist, particularly at the RCOG location. And so that's certainly something that we can continue to talk about, Dr. Lori. And that will be a conversation with Dr. Pam, Michael, Dr. Charlene, Dr. Ricky, and myself. So we'll work on that. We recognize as well that as we add more employees, the question becomes, are they all needing just like the question we had with CISC grant? I said, do they all have to be housed in that one facility? And how much space do you actually need? So as people keep adding and adding and adding, then we ask ourselves, do we need all of them to be concentrated in one area, or can we spread them out because we do have technology available? So absent a brand new building to move everybody into, we make do, and we try to be as resourceful as we possibly can. So we'll get that conversation started sometime this week. But thank you for raising that. Well,
Is there
thank
any other questions?
any questions from anyone? I do want to thank you for that very thorough and comprehensive report, Michael, and thank you, of course, for leading the way and allowing team members such as JV to advance in his credentials and his competencies, serving as a role model in that area. In today's world, it's all about what's available to us in the form of stackable credentials and continuous improvement, whether it be processes or whether it be through employees' capabilities in general. So you have always led the way in that regard, including your chat bot. So we greatly appreciate you sharing, and congratulations again to JV.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
There are other aspects that we're moving, and like Madam Chair mentioned, because of the space limitations, is what are we doing to try to make sure that we can make use of what it is that we have? So there are technological advances that we're getting pretty close to being able to finish. I just didn't want to show you an unfinished product, but hopefully by the time we have our next board meeting, we can showcase a little bit more of that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Okay. If there isn't anything else, moving on to item 4.2, resolution number 26-06, relative to amending the RCOG purchase card policy and cardholder agreement, of course, stemming from our previous or latest audit findings. Michael, I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to you.
Certainly. Okay, so the first one is going to be the amending the purchase card policy. There are several amendments that we're making to this. Really, originally when I did this, I actually outfitted the entire thing, but I thought it might be very hard to explain such a vast difference. So I really ended up building off of what we have in our purchase card policy. And a lot of it really is just, for the most part, almost this entire policy change is really just saying what we actually do right now. When we were originally created, the RCOG credit card or purchase card policy, it was based off of what it was, in 2015, when it was established in 15-05. So there's been a lot of changes since then, a lot of process changes that have become more efficient than it was in the previous times. And it's really about just kind of getting this policy to be able to be based off of what it is that we're doing now. So, as an example, our purchase card policy didn't originally say that you can use your purchase card for the travel policy or that we follow the travel policy for that. So now our purchase card policy does state that it also follows the travel card policy. That's one of the ones that's probably, it sounds like it's something that, it should be already said, but it didn't previously say that in the meeting or in the policy. One other thing that's very key here as well is that a lot of it put a lot of pressure on the actual credit card holder user and to be able to have many of the responsibilities. But the fact remains that it's more of a unit-based thing instead. Just because one person has a credit card doesn't mean that one person is responsible for every single thing, nor are they signing for every single transaction that they're having. So this shows that it's more of a centralized procurement process instead, in which they do have people that work for them that is able to be able to process said transactions on their behalf. Going on, there's a lot, so I'm gonna speak a little fast. So if there's anything in particular that you have any questions on, feel free to stop me. You don't have to stop me near the end. One thing that was totally unnecessary that we did not need anymore is originally our policy said that our PO had to say paid by credit card. We don't normally have that anymore is because it's already pretty obvious by the vendor name that it's being paid by credit card, but obviously, that's just something that we wanted to be removed because it was something that was not necessary. I do also want to mention that our RCG policy is just a method of payment only. It's not, it follows the procurement policy, it follows the travel policy, and it follows the policies of the grants or awards that we do as well. So it's like writing a check or writing in cash. It's really just a form of payment rather than a standalone policy. Again, mentioning that it is a centralized procurement policy, the card may be issued in the name of an individual cardholder, but the card may be used by other RCOG or UOG personnel to make approved purchases on behalf of RCOG programs, grants, projects, contracts, awards, or anything else. I think that part's key is because it is quite common for my card in particular, under my name, to be used for many transactions, and it may not always be RCOG core team. It may be for grants beyond the RCOG office as well. But of course, they're always subject to the procurement and travel policy of RCOG. It's always as key, it's very important too that purchase card transactions should be planned in advance. So it's always just because it's also subject to the procurement and travel policy, that means there should be a corresponding travel authorization or there should also be a purchase order for it as well. We should be avoiding any form of charging a credit card without any planning in advance, such as a PO or a travel authorization. There is an ability to be able to there is not ability to, there's an inability to be able to use it while on travel status unless you had it approved previously. That's extremely rare in which we've had that kind of situation where a credit card user used their credit card while on travel status, albeit it is a situation that has been done maybe two or three times before. So we just wanted to make sure that we have a policy against that. For the most part, purchase cards are actually not carried around. They're normally put into a safe and not really shared amongst many people. Example, mine, I don't think I've held my credit card for more than 2 minutes in my hand, actually. So for the most part, it's always safe kept. Sorry, I'm going ahead. This part is key. Purchase cards should not be used to split purchases or otherwise avoid procurement requirements. Meaning, as an example, if a transaction is going to be over 10,000, so you split it to 7,000 and 4,000 in two separate transactions to be able to avoid the three quote requirement, that's not allowable. We have been doing actually now for roughly a year, a monthly reconciliation. I'd like to thank one of my team members, Angelica Ventura, who does that. That gives much more transparency to the cardholder, but also us as well of, what's going in and out of the credit card on a monthly basis. We already do that. That previously was not in the policy, but it is something that we already do, and that added to our internal controls of the credit card. And then it's really just about, who has the responsibility of the timely payments. Really, it's not just the cardholder. Originally, it put all the onus on a cardholder, but it's really also the administrative support of the cardholder to be able to make it happen. And then again, this part, you'll see that the responsible cardholder person was the cardholder for almost everything. We changed it quite a bit to either RCOG personnel, the requester program or unit, and just identifying who their actual people that are really doing the work, because it was not up to date from before. It made it seem like the cardholder was doing everything, but that wasn't the reality of what was actually being done. And that's it.
Thank you very much,
Michael,
Michael. I
may
forgot to ask for a motion for action followed by second and into
I'm sorry.
discussion. So I go ahead and entertain a motion for
I
action and
move
resolution.
to act on the proposed resolution.
Thank you,
Yeah.
Vice Chair Dr. Santos Bamba. Do I hear a second?
A second.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hernandez. So we'll move to discussion. So Dr. Charlene, you had a question?
Yes, and a question generally, and for the record, I think, and Michael, do these proposed changes, just for the record again, these of course were in consultation, right, with the OPA and the recommendations that came forward as a result of their review.
Yes. And
Yes.
it was also to be able to align it with what it is that we exactly that we do as well. That was one of their recommendations, is to
Right.
align it on what you actually do so that it actually makes more sense. And that's what we have done by making some of these changes. Because we made changes to the P card policy, the first card policy, that also then in turn makes changes to the procurement and travel policy, which is actually why they're back to back to back in terms of resolution changes.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, any other questions?
Yeah, I just have a few comments, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Dr. Ricky, go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks to Michael for working on this. I know that what a lot of this was prompted by an I guess an a OPA audit that has yet to be released, but we have been working in concert with what some of those potential findings might be, because that is an unofficially released audit. But I know that in doing this, trying to be a bit proactive in addressing some of the concerns raised, which it, as Michael had mentioned, because this policy was created during the beginning years of RCOG before we became a lot more sophisticated, that the practices changed for obviously for the better because we were growing, but the policies didn't keep up. And so I think some of the initial findings from the OPA's audit are what we're trying to address here. And so I just wanted to say generally in my review of it, and of course working with Michael on some of the findings of the audit, this should address if not all but most of the issues. Not to say that it'll probably erase any audit findings, because those findings of course were before this policy is even being considered as changed. But what I do appreciate is not only the level of detail and showing kind of the new language being added, but also kind of generalizing parts that need to be general, because the policy should be flexible. And
Yep.
so I think Michael and his team did a good job. I will recommend just and this would be just a technical correction, which I don't think really needs any amendment to the motion. But any reference to procurement policy should probably just be mentioned, changed to procurement guidelines and procedures, because I think the title of our procurement policy is really just procurement guidelines and procedures. So, but I appreciate this P-card policy being flexible and enough and references both the travel policy, which I know we're talking about later, but requires for the most part P-card use, and then also our procurement guidelines and procedures. And so it as we go through the other two, they all kind of make sure that it references each other. But what I do appreciate is that there's going to be an understanding of the P card is not a procurement method. It's a payment method. It's a form of payment. You can pay by check or you can pay by P card. So as this gets implemented, I'm sure there is going to be adequate training for anyone that may have a P card purchase. And I will just, for clarification, this is specifically for RCOG and not for UOG. Business office is going to be working on something as it relates to the UOG business office side, which is a lot more, maybe a lot more sophisticated because we have to follow our own GovGuam procurement regulations that are and UOG procurement regulations. So a little bit more complicated on that end, but I just wanted to make those comments.
Thank you
Thank
very
you, Dr.
much.
Ritchie.
Any other comments? Questions? Okay. I don't see any. Let me go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of approving resolution 26-06, please signify by saying aye, raising your right hand.
Aye.
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 Any opposed? None opposed. The motion carries. Resolution 26-06 is approved. The next item on the agenda is 4.3, resolution number 26-07, relative to amending the RCOG procurement guidelines and procedures. I go ahead and entertain a motion for action.
Move for action.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Dr. Charlene. Do I hear a second?
A second.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ritchie. It's been seconded. Michael, I turn it over to you for a discussion.
Thank you, Dr. Ricky, and thank you for your recommendation on the RCOG procurement guidance and procedures. I did make the correction on some of them, and it looks like I didn't on that one. So thank you for that. This is the current one right now that we did. So there is various changes, and I don't, most of it is deriving because of the RCOG purchase card policy, like you mentioned from the OPA audit. But there's also things that through my career as the Chief Business Officer and Interim Executive Director that I found some things that we could be better in as well, that we could actually have more policy in as well. So it's not entirely on that. I'm very keen on being proactive on this. If there are deficiencies that I think that we can be better in to be able to fix them. So I'll go through some of them. First is that obviously there's now a cover page. There's been so many different changes. I ended up just creating an entirely new cover page just so that we can see all the changes within the procurement policy. Applicability was key because this is for all RCOG purchases, regardless of funding source. So that includes federal, non-federal contracts. Originally in the policy, it said for federal awards. It didn't seem to distinguish between all the other type of purchases that were out there. So I wanted to ensure that we also include all the others, such as our NAP accounts, our non-federals, and our other accounts in which we use our procurement policy for. It will also comply with, if it's a federal award, with 2 CFR Part 200, otherly known as Uniform Guidance, that goes from all the sections from 317 all the way up to 327 also. I think this part is really key, is that all purchases have to have a valid RCOG business or project purpose and must be allowable under the applicable funding source. I always get people that would mention, like, why can't we purchase this? It doesn't say that in the procurement policy. We always said this, verbally. Anything that you purchase, no matter what, whether it be come from your NAF or not, has to have an RCOG or a University of Guam funding allowability or be necessary or reasonable. Now it says that in our policy. Felt like something that you shouldn't have to say, but I felt like just to be able to protect ourselves, that was something that was necessary. The principal investigator, these are mostly things that already existed, but we kind of moved around throughout this policy. This part was not included previously, but it is part of our procurement policy that anything $30,001 and above is signed by the interim ex or the executive director, and anything below can be signed by the chief business officer. So there is a delegation of authority resolution that does state this. We're just including that language also within the procurement policy. So that any time a PO is created and it's above 30,000, that it's signed by myself or any future executive director. We did create a requisition section. So there isn't a section for a request for PO or a requisition previously in the procurement policy. One of the requests was to be able to standardize or have the same requirements in a requisition form because some people have more, some people have less in their requisition. At minimum, our requisition requirements are the ones that I listed here from 1 to 9. It's very, very common that you've probably seen in any form of requisition within the University of Guam. We just want to make sure that we have more of a standard requirement rather than just having little for some and more for others. The use of the P card, basically this section just states that, again, it's just a form of payment, but yes, you can use the P card for procurement. And traditionally, if you look into our system, they're traditionally recorded as RCUG FHP as the vendor. And now our policy does state how it's normally going to be recorded. This part didn't really change. I did include here that it has to come from three different vendors that didn't say that previously. Never had any negative feedback in regards to that, but I just thought it was something that we should add, that we don't just get three quotes, but we get three quotes from three different vendors. There is a section here that normally it goes to the lowest or most responsive. There is at times where the lowest and most responsive is actually not the best option in many cases. So I did include a caveat that, if there is, it needs to be approved by whoever the executive director is, whether it be myself or somebody else. Just because there are some times where purchases don't make sense to go to the one that's the lowest because of certain requirements that they don't meet. This section remains unchanged. The back half is the part that changed quite a bit. This part, in terms of the sole source, it didn't state this before, at least not in good detail. But if the grant or the awardee does state, expressly in writing to use a specific vendor that could be used as a sole source. That is a common reason, actually, for why when we have sole sources, because the grantor themselves had that in the budget for that specific vendor. Our policy now states that if it is within the budget and it's specifically named, that it would be okay. And that we do have a sole source documentation form as well. We do have a standard form now that we already created for this. Dr. Ricky has probably seen it a couple times come across his desk. This is just a standard form where anytime we have a sole source that we also fill out that document to be able to say why it's a sole source. Instead of having a memo to state that, to having that form instead, so it's more standardized. Next one going to the next is mostly at the end. It's purchase order adjustment. This actually wasn't mentioned in the procurement policy at all. So now we have a section explaining what a purchase order adjustment is. If you read our purchase orders, they typically say that you don't, if you know, typically they all say that you only need a purchase order adjustment if it's over 10%. Or more. So now our policy does notate that is that you need it if there is a change of 10% or more, or if the funding source changes as well. This is the part in our purchase order that specifically states that vendors are instructed not to fill an order if the cost exceeds the approved purchase order by more than 10%. Again, our procurement policy didn't originally say that, but our procurement PO form itself said that. I just wanted to make sure that our policy matches what's on our form. If for some reason, there is an immediate need and a purchase order, can't be done, a purchase order adjustment can't be done, it still should be done, as it still should be completed as soon as practical, but no later than 5 days after the authorization. That part is key because there are some times where, the PO is the PO or adjustment is already completed, but the last signature doesn't come until like 3 or 4 days later. I guess this part is to kind of protect against some of that. And lastly, are two things actually. The blanket PO was not notated at all in our procurement policy. Now we do have it in. That's primarily for recurring purchases that we're going to make. Primarily for small purchases. For example, at Home Depot, if you're going to purchase several supplies, what we've always told everybody is that you can't do more than 1500. Our procurement policy or guidelines now states that as well. And lastly, for direct payments, which we always discourage, we have a whole paragraph saying of why please don't do it, basically. But there are uses for it, such as for stipends, scholarships, fellowships, participant support costs. You're never going to go through a procurement process for that because it's always going to be a direct payment, tuition. You don't get quotes for that, which is why they typically go through a direct payment. And lastly, if there is an emergency or urgent transaction when advanced processing of a PO was not reasonably possible. This wasn't here in the policy before, so we added it in so that we can ensure that we can say to everybody what that is, why not to do it, but if you do do it, these reasons are okay for it. And that completes it all.
Thank you very much, Michael, for that comprehensive presentation. Are there any questions, any comments?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just wanted to just some comments from just from my perspective. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that I think generally speaking, we use the word must in a lot of places, and it might be helpful to because we use may just for legalese, just to use shall. So it might be that's probably more of a technical thing than anything. Just replacing the word must with shall might be helpful just to keep it consistent with other policies. I will mention that it's good that we're adding in some of the processes you already have in place, such as the requisition process, which helps to formalize that in the guidelines. And then the adding the sole source authorization if it is specifically identified in the grant or contract. But then also adding in the three items, the purchase order adjustments, if it's above a certain threshold, the blanket purchase order, which the university only updated that in 2020 on our procurement side. So probably why it wasn't included in the original procurement guidelines. And then the direct payments, which I think the language is good because it's very specific to the things you see on the screen on the top 1, 2, and 3. And then you also reference that planned procurement is, of course, the guiding principle in the entire procurement policy. But what I do appreciate is the first part of the entire guideline references that you follow the cost principles to CFR, and the terms and conditions of all the grants, so or contracts. So that's kind of a good catch-all. In the event something does not follow to CFR 200 and the T&Cs or the cost principles and subpart E then of the UG, then that should, be the one that you follow. If anything in the policies or the guidelines, because we know that those are changing. We don't know exactly how, so there's some flexibility in there. But
We're
I'll just
trying to
mention
keep
the
a
whole.
lot of it as flexible in general as possible. It's my exact thinking because I don't want to make so many changes. So your thoughts are exactly why I'm wording some of these the way I am.
So I just wanted to make those comments and appreciate the, the care taken to kind of flesh out some of the language. I think another technical thing, Michael, to consider is when doing policies, maybe you can look at UOG's policies in terms of how it's numbered, so that if you are doing memos that reference some exceptions, or you have like some things that determine reasonableness, like determining if a small purchase and you get three quotes and you determine that the lowest quote is not the one you want to go with, you may want to number these appropriately so that when you're referencing it in a memo, in a written determination, that you can reference these guidelines and say section 3.7.1.1. So if you don't have to change any of the language, but if you could make a number it properly so that you can reference it in a later memo, that would be probably helpful. But those are the only two kind of blanket things: change must to shall, and then kind of renumber everything so it's easily referenced.
Thank you, Dr. Rakib.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments? Any questions? Thank you. So I'm sorry. Regent Malila, you had a question?
Oh no, I was waiting to vote.
Okay. Well, given the two suggestions, which is really a matter of minor edits concerning the draft resolution that's on the floor for action. I'd like to go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of approving resolution 2607, please signify by saying aye, raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, none. The motion carries. Resolution is approved. The final action item 4.4, resolution number 26-08, relative to amending the RCEOG travel policy. I'd like to entertain a motion for action.
So moved.
Thank you, Dr. Charlene. Do I hear a second?
A second.
Thank you, Dr. Ricky. Okay, Michael, it's back to you for discussion.
Okay, so just as with the last two policies, this one now is the travel policy that we're making changes to. A lot of it is again due to the OPA audit, but some of it is also things that we found, that we have issues with also on our side that we want to clarify as well. So there are several things throughout this. Again, we created a new cover sheet. There's just been too many policy changes, so we wanted to make sure we're able to showcase the differences. This one is key, allowable expenditures. So should meals be provided by the event or host, meals per diem is to be deducted accordingly. We already do this. So does the University of Guam as well. We didn't specifically state that. We always just mentioned that we follow GSA rates, which would say that also. But now our policy does state that. So if your conference provides lunch, for example, we're not going to provide lunch per diem for that day. And this part, if you last more than 7 days on travel, you're traditionally supposed to take actual lodging expenses. We put an alternative that if someone wants to claim per diem up to 7 days, which is the maximum, anyways, that would be allowable, but they would have to voluntarily be able to elect on that. We see that both in RCOG and the University of Guam do that. We just wanted to indicate in our policy that it is allowable to be able to take that as an alternative. Although that you do then remove your allowability to be able to claim on your 8th or 9th or 10th day for your lodging if you're to be able to pursue that per diem instead. We put here travelers must select the most reasonable, lowest economy airfare for travel. We must comply with including the Fly American Act when travel is federally funded. We didn't state this before in our policy, but we've always followed it no matter what. The Fly American Act, in which we need to use an American carrier for our flights if we're using federal funds. Now it does state that in our policy that we follow that. We have a new policy here, and the reason why we created this policy is because a lot of times the lowest travel or the lowest economy airfare tended to have unreasonable connection times, such as being in Houston for 30 minutes, for example. So we did put, and the keyword here is should, select flight itineraries with reasonable connection times. So when it practicable, connection should allow at least 90 minutes between flights. And 2 hours if if you're going to be switching customs, immigrations, baggage recheck, or airports. It doesn't mean that you have to. There's a keyword here is should, but we recommend that because again, there's been several times in which the cheapest economy flight has very unreasonable connection times. I just want to be sure that when we make these exceptions, it's because of policy, and because we create the reasonable connection time policy, which is now here. One of the recommendations that we were recommended was that the $10,000 for airfare for one quote was too high. I do agree with them on this. So we've re reduced it by 60%. It's now at 4,000 for one qu written quote. And if it's over $4,000, then you would need three written airfare quotes. That part is similar to the University of Guam, although this is a higher amount than UOG. So it would just basically be if it's over $4,000, you need three written quotes. You need to showcase that in your travel authorization. If you do go on official, if you do go on a personal or side trip or alternative destination, our policy now mirrors the University of Guam on this. UOG's policy is a lot longer. But they basically say the same thing, is that if you're going on any side trip of any sort, that you need to be provide a comparison for the direct flight costs. So because RCOG will only pay for official business travel, so they'll only pay for the costs of the travel that you're going to go to your actual destination and not your other destinations that you're doing. That is pretty much the same thing as the University of Guam's policy. The only difference is that UOG's policy is like 2 pages long. Saying this. Upgrading a seat is not allowable unless you have these specific things. So, a documented medical need was something that was originally there. If the economy seating is unavailable for your time sensitive official travel, that has happened on various occasions where someone needed to travel, but their only seat available was an upgraded seat. And the other one is the upgraded fare is equal to or less than the lowest reasonable economy fare. I know that sounds weird, but there are occasions where an upgraded seat is actually cheaper than the economy. It has happened in previous times, so we wanted to ensure that's also part of our policy that you choose the lowest, even if it's not the economy. If the upgrade results in a lower cost to RCOG after considering direct and documented travel costs. We had situations where if you are to upgrade to a business class, for example, you don't have your check-in fees for your luggage. So it ends up actually being cheaper than getting an economy. And we didn't have that capability before with our policy. And we wanted to ensure that if you're going to upgrade your seat and you end up spending a lot less than what it would be as an economy, then it would make sense to be able to upgrade. Or lastly, if the applicable sponsor provides written approval for the upgraded seating as well. This part is key. Travel duration, comfort, convenience, preferred seating, or the desire to sit with another traveler are not sufficient justification, except if you're seating with a minor under the traveler's care. Moving on, ground transportation rental insurance is now included. It previously wasn't. These are for if you were to rent a vehicle. While traveling. Moving on. We removed the outside the Pacific corridor because it became sometimes difficult for us to be able to ascertain what was in and what was out of the Pacific corridor. So we just kept it as any flight that's requiring more than 8 hours of flying are granted an additional day, meaning 2 days per diem before your conference or your meeting. Moving on. This originally said that RCOG will, we just changed it to can because we don't always arrange with a travel agency. It didn't make sense with the original wording. This part is pretty key. It's basically saying this is more of a future proofing. There is, if SafeGuard 200 passes, like what I mentioned in the executive report, if they do have it where the travel awardee has to ask for approval from the sponsor before they travel, that they need to get approval. So this is basically future proofing for that. It doesn't say that it's required right now. It just says that if the travel is charged with federal and they require it, then you need to get approval from them. We don't know what's going to happen yet, but that's very typical language actually in the terms and conditions of many awards. Moving on. Any expense claimed on behalf of another traveler must be separately identified in the travel clearance, and there must be written justification. In a previous change that we made is that we mentioned in the TA process that you can't pay for another person. This now says that also in the travel clearance, hey, you're not supposed to pay for another person too. You need to have written documentation of why you're doing that. And then we included a section for travel authorization adjustments. So that again was not in the policy at all. This kind of goes in line if you've ever seen RCOG's travel authorization adjustment form. The language here is actually very similar. So transposing that information to here. That, hey, if it's over 10% or more than $250, then you need to make a travel authorization form so that you can make the correction or you can get the approval before doing the transaction. And that completes the travel adjustments.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'll open the floor to any questions or comments at this time.
I just had
Oh,
to.
oh. Oh no, I was just saying that you can keep in mind with Dr. Hernandez's recommendations to the other policy was that to change the must to shall and section it nicely so you can cite them directly when you write your memos. I think those were
Okay.
good points made.
Right.
That's
Thank
about it.
you. Thank you. And yes, you're absolutely right. Thank you, Regent Malile. So the other term is may, and may makes it optional. So that's just that's what we normally see in our board resolutions and policies. So just for consistency's sake, thank you. Any other comments? Any questions?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Just to add on to that, I know that there was a change from will to can, so you can probably change that can to may specifically. I just note two things. I know there's a reference to the Fairlock that was from the previous language, and I know Fairlock has kind of increased in price now when you're traveling to the mainland. So there's some flexibility in practice that the policy allows for, which determines reasonableness. So you don't have to put that into the policy, but it would be good by practice that you internally document what isn't considered reasonable. Because in some cases, you pay $180 for a Fairlock, which is, I don't think is reasonable. It used to be like $20, $30, $50, but now it's like very expensive. So if you put a threshold on to determine reasonableness, then you can probably avoid people reading that to say 180 is reasonable. And then the only other one was, we know that United has kind of changed the way they price tickets, and we've seen basic economy. So you may want to, in your practice, determine that the lowest economy fare includes baggage, or has, so because there's
It does
basic
actually.
economy. Yeah.
It says our policy says the economy with one check bag.
Okay, so that doesn't include
Yeah.
basic then. Okay, cool. That's all.
Yeah.
That's my only comments. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Okay, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of approving resolution 26-08, please signify by saying aye, raising your right hand.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. 26-08 is approved. Thank you, folks. Our last item on the agenda 5-0 is adjournment. I'll go ahead and entertain a motion.
Regent Malila wants to adjourn.
Okay,
Second.
mention, yeah, motion made by Regent Malila, seconded by I think Dr. Charlene.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, we are officially adjourned. It is 3:13 p.m. Thank you, everyone, for being part of this meeting, and thank you, Michael, and your RCOG amazing team. Thank you for your leadership. Okay.
Thank you,
Take
everyone.
care, everyone. We hope to
Thank
see you
you.
this week. Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.